Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwin. Hurricane forecasters are predicting that 2007 will once again be a big year for storms. They're projecting 9 hurricanes, including 5 of at least Category 3 strength, akin to the blockbusters of 2004 and 2005. Of course, there were similar predictions for last year, which did not materialize, likely due to the dampening effect on storms of the El Niño weather system. The prospect that another major hurricane could come ashore in the U.S. this year can hardly bring comfort to the people in the Gulf Coast region, who were savaged by Hurricanes Katrina and Rita in 2005. Today, 18 months after the storms, many New Orleanians still live in 240 square feet of space, that is, in FEMA trailers in their own driveways, next to bare foundations or the gutted frames of their former homes. And many city residents are frustrated. They're fed up with struggling to get loans and grants to rebuild their houses. But neighbors are still helping neighbors, and they're being helped in turn by a remarkable flow of young volunteers still streaming in from around the country. Living on Earth's Ingrid Lobet reports from New Orleans.
This neighborhood in New Orleans East is a stretch of tidy post-war homes with front yards mostly still bare after their saltwater soaking by Lake Pontchartrain a couple of blocks up the road. The white rear ends of a few FEMA trailers butt out into driveways.
But a few months ago, there were more trailers than this. There were really more trailers than this. So for the sea, majority of our trailers are leaving. That's a good sign.
Tangi Russell keeps vigil over her neighborhood by day. At night, when she's at work at the post office, her neighbors keep watch. Determined to stay connected after the storm, somehow, together, they've created the certainty for each other to return.
One of them found out that most of our neighbors were coming back, so one told the other, and then word spread it out that the majority of us was coming back. That gave us a green light to go ahead and start redoing our house.
Hey!
She's one of our workers with energy, but she lives down the street, too.
These neighbors mow the lawns of the few houses still vacant.
So basically, if I need help with roofing or something, I'll call the guys and they'll come. So we pretty much help each other out because we have a neighbor down there. He's in Iraq right now. We keep in touch with him. He calls us once a month and let us know that he's okay and he'll be back. Once we get everybody back, we're going to have a seafood boil in the neighborhood.
And today is another advance toward that date because the house across from Russell's, vacant for so long, is finally getting its guts removed. A group of students from the College of Worcester in Ohio wear white Tyvek suits, smash through drywall, and shovel it out onto the curb. On top of a little pile the students have set aside is a card that says, "Mom, you are valued, you are needed, you are loved." Inside, the walls were once light blue. Now a fierce black mold populates the walls up to a perfect line at about 3 feet, the line where water sat. The splotchy mass is nearly a quarter inch thick in some places.
Hey, where the keys at to the blue van?
A few hours later, the house is gutted, and some students move on to the next house. These volunteers and thousands of others are a feature of today's New Orleans. They come from all over the country in wave after wave, organized by student associations, church youth groups, young activists. On any given morning, you can find a newly arrived group getting orientation, as here at Louisiana United Methodist Storm Recovery.
In the meantime, we have one of New Orleans' finest right here. This is Sergeant Albert. He's going to talk to you about safety while you're here this week.
Just going to tell you all, I'm John Favalor. I'm assigned up here to the 6th District. This area around here, I'm not going to lie to you, is one of the hottest areas we have. Just around the corner the other day, we had a drive-by shooting. And it's all our shootings up here are dope dealers. They shooting each other. We had 3 of them Saturday. But while you're up here, be careful. You ladies like to shop. They got all kinds of blue jean places. They sell the blue jeans, the used jeans, and everything else. But around here, don't go roaming at night. When y'all do these houses, just pay attention to what you're doing. We've been having a lot of trouble with spiders. Hit a couple policemen and got bit. You know, make sure it's well lit where you're working at. And that's all I got to tell you.
Sir?
Uh-huh.
What kind of spiders was it?
The brown recluse. But y'all just be careful out there and thank y'all. We really do appreciate it. If it wasn't for y'all, we'd be in deep trouble. And, you know, thank y'all from the people of New Orleans. Okay?
The owners of the houses where the volunteers will work may be elderly, disabled, for some reason unable to do the tear out on their homes. Recovery Center staffer Sean Darnell reminds the volunteers to be compassionate about what that person may have been through.
You may look at something and say, this is not worth saving. You know, why does she want to keep this?
Darnell tells them to collect any papers that could be used for identity theft. The volunteers' work will enable the crucial next step, treating the framing for mold.
Your goal when you walk out of that house is to have nothing but the exterior walls and the studs showing.
We've got knee pads, throw bars, small sledges.
And with that, volunteers collect hand tools and fan out across the city to their assignments. Sean Darnell sits down for a minute to breathe between back-to-back orientations.
I think our Baton Rouge headquarters told us that we will see over 3,000 volunteers for the month of March. We have no more housing for the month of March.
Since the storms, she estimates her group has brought in 25,000 people. That's just United Methodist efforts. It doesn't count Habitat for Humanity or Catholic Charities or other large nonprofits.
I have been surprised at the response 18 months later. All of the experts told us after the first year, it's going to decrease drastically. And we have more volunteers here than we've ever had before. By double. We know that this summer we have another very big influx of volunteers. It's amazing.
People like Darnell, who direct these scores of volunteers, are disaster victims themselves. They haul themselves out of bed in the morning and face personal restoration while they try to raise up their city.
My house was okay, but Katrina has torn my family apart. My husband is working in California and has been there for a year now. And we don't have an end in sight.
Only half as many people live in the city as before. Half a population means half an economy. Darnell's husband works for Southwest Airlines, which offered to keep its employees on if they would relocate somewhere people were still going. The family's best compromise on income, stability, and school left their 8-year-old son, Colton, living away from his dad.
You know, there was despair still and the devastation. In certain areas of the city, you look around and it's ghost towns. The frustration with, even now, 18 months later, going to the grocery store and there not being any eggs because they might be delivered, but they haven't had the staff to get them out. Just living here on a day-to-day basis can be nerve-wracking.
She worries about her son.
And that is my fear as a mother, is that he grows up and, you know, 8-10 years from now, he looks back and says, my life was normal until Katrina.
It was horrible.
You get up about some
pictures. I did it for the first time today.
After a day of often physical work, the volunteers return to wherever they're camped. In this case, Carrollton United Methodist Church. The stately building is showing some wear. It's been given over to need. Some high school students from an Iowa City Unitarian youth group are here. They've spent several days remaking a ball field and clearing monster overgrowth. They're angry at what they've witnessed, especially the notices tacked to the front doors of people who aren't back yet, saying they have to clean up or face legal action. Here are Abby Marshall, Mike Misson, and Eve Harvey Stavely.
The lady's house that we worked on, she hasn't been seen since the storm, and they just put a note up on her house.
She's an old lady, and she's in a wheelchair.
and they expect her to come back and clean all this up.
Yeah. I was disgusted. Yeah. I was just like, how can you do this to your
people?
They
don't even have power there yet. So.
And these are people who had to work for what they have, and they're proud of what they have.
The loss leaves a powerful impression on Mike and Eve.
Like, a lot of it's just clear and, like, overgrown, but you can still see the foundations. You just realize how many houses were just, like, ripped up and destroyed.
And, you know, they're never going to forget the memories. Going on a tour today, she could point out, she's like, that open lot was so-and-so's house, and she knew who lived there. And
like, there's just, like, one spot where all the oak trees had, like, overgrown into a canopy, and she just said the whole street had been like that, and then it was just, like, at the end, it was just, like, four trees that were doing that, and it was just sad to see how much had been destroyed.
Everywhere they go, Anna Can says they encounter gratitude.
Just random people in the street will tell us that they're happy we're here and stuff, yeah. And it makes you feel really good, and so I just want them to get their houses back and stuff.
Several kids say they felt misled by media coverage. How could I not know the number of people who died in these storms, Abby Marshall asked.
I feel like you shouldn't have to come here to know the damage that's been done, and you shouldn't have to come here to just... like, see what's happened. I don't know. It's just there's so much that went on that I feel like I would never have known if I hadn't come here. And it's been a huge eye-opener. Like, I know now. I can't just take things for face value, you know.
Older students also said what they'd seen on TV did not prepare them for reality.
I'm Aaron Fitzgerald, and I'm from Rhodes College in Memphis, Tennessee. When I came down here and I saw cars still flipped over, roofs just off of a person's house. And then recently today, we gutted someone's house, and her floor, this was in the lower ninth ward, her floor was just completely still damped. And I took up her floor, and I had to bring her in the house, and I'm like, do you want us to take up your whole floor, or do you just want us to leave the frame? A friend of mine, Jamie, he fell through twice. I fell through once. It was awful.
The trip, though, he says, is worthwhile.
I mean, I'd recommend anyone to come down here because, I mean, I think that when you do, your life will be changed. Like, I feel changed.
Fitzgerald recounts that one of his group leaders marveled at the numbers of volunteers, but he was struck by something different.
And I'm thinking in my head, we're supposed to be a first world country, and yet we still have others living in third world poverty. In our own country, in a city that is a major city.
Still older students, law students, have formed their own student hurricane network. Since the storms, the network has brought down 2,700 law students to the Gulf Coast and organized others long distance. Lauren Bartlett is in her third year at American University.
First of all, I think that there's sort of a new generation of law students which are definitely committed to public interest work, maybe even some who came to law school since the storms of 2005 for the particular purpose of being involved.
Morgan Williams is co-founder of the network and a third-year student at Tulane. He says even though they're students, not attorneys, and even though Louisiana law is unique, the students can be extremely helpful.
Basically, in communities where homes have been handed down for generations and generations, you know, folks at the time of the storm might not have had the actual piece of paper that said that they were the owner of that home. And when the home gets destroyed and everyone gets displaced, the state says, we need that piece of paper. And so because the federal funding that's being administered through the state, through the Road Home Program, is linked to having that piece of paper, they're being locked out from being able to receive those funds and being able to begin the process of rebuilding.
Pro bono attorneys who can help people with these affidavits are so overwhelmed they can't take more applications. Enter the law students. The teams are also carrying out a major survey of people who are still, this long after the storm, living in FEMA trailers.
Residents living in trailers are the most forgotten, the most marginalized. There's a lot of needs, but we need to figure out what those are before we can really start to move.
It's something that's bringing these law students face to face with the realities of the rebuilding process and the frustration and the anger and the sources of those frustrations and anger that folks down here are really facing in their efforts to rebuild.
Bartlett says she's one of the law students whose life direction has been changed.
When the storm hit, you know, some things just really touch you in a way that you can't really use words to describe. And when the storm hit, you know, felt really connected and felt really personal about it all. And Started fundraising at my law school, started having conferences and getting articles published, and came down and have been here pretty much every second of every day that I could possibly spare since. And I'm going to be moving down here in August. I want to live here.
Every Tuesday night, people in the Holy Cross neighborhood in the 9th Ward meet. They've met for years, but now their work is all strategy, related to rebuilding and protecting their historically rich and devastated neighborhood. They sort through bureaucratic and day-to-day hurdles.
And one guy said he had a building permit number, but when he tried to get his building permit, they told him he had no building permit.
So say again?
I haven't had a refrigerator since Thanksgiving.
Mine just went out a few days ago and everything melted down.
Residents also address signs of progress. They make plans for opening a new store and donation center for green building materials. They applaud a group of first-year medical students from Dartmouth who've stopped in. They're helping rebuild a neighborhood clinic. And there's a happy announcement. More people are coming back. The post office is delivering to 800 houses in the neighborhood, up from 200 a month and a half ago. At the break, 77-year-old Jean Lee stops to discuss how things are going with her property.
I was in the area on Monday getting my house gutted out. The houses are really coming back.
Who was gutting your house out?
It was some volunteers from the University of New Hampshire. Very lovely young people, and they worked very hard, very, very hard. They started like 9 o'clock in the morning, and they worked about 5 in the evening, and the house was completely gutted.
But when it comes to taking the next step, rebuilding, Lee, like so many people here, has been waiting for a letter that says she'll get some state recovery help. It hasn't arrived.
So now I've got to go back and to make a loan if I'm going to repair the property. And at my advanced age, I don't know, you know, how that's going to work out. That has me bothered.
But Jean Lee made sure I knew before the meeting resumed that she plans to meet the challenges.
I said, I'm 77 and I have not begun to fight. I'm going to fight to keep my house.
The Holy Cross meeting adjourns. It's late. Tonight, under roofs across the city, young volunteers will set out air mattresses, assimilate what they've seen, wash dishes together. And in a too quiet neighborhood elsewhere in the city, an ice cream man drives a distance before there's someone to spend a dollar. For Living on Earth, I'm Ingrid Lobet in New Orleans.
You can find more of our coverage of the aftermath of Katrina on our website at loe.org. That's loe.org. And we'd love to hear your comments on our program. Send them along to comments at loe.org. That's comments at loe.org. Our postal address is 20 Holland Street, Somerville, Massachusetts, 02144. And you can call our listener line anytime at 800-218-9988. That's 800-218-9988. Just ahead, how global warming is raising concerns about international conflict and social strife. You're listening to Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment. And from you, our listeners, and from member stations. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.